ancient philosophers and contemporary scientists agree that to be happy, we need relationships. We need to feel like we have intimate, deep, enduring bonds. We need to feel like we belong. We need to be able to get support. And just as important for happiness, we need to be able to give support.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to episode 34 of the Mad Happy Podcast. I'm Payman.
And I'm Mason.
And today we're back with our second episode, new episode of the year. So excited for you guys to hear it. Before we get to that, I think, again, a lot of excitement for the foundation launch last week. So if you didn't listen to last week's episode, we're super excited to launch the Mad Happy Foundation. 1% of all sales forever will be going into that, plus a bunch of other ways that we're going to work to raise money and ultimately be able to give grants to great projects, whether they're research studies, schools and people in need, or just to continue staying on the cutting edge of what's going on in the space. So I think the reaction has been pretty amazing, and just happy to be able to share that with everyone.
Yeah, the reaction's been fantastic. I think even in the last week or so, just getting hit up by so many different organizations or other advocates in the space, and really just excited for what we can build and the amazing people we can work with and the real change that we can create.
Yeah. And remember, if you guys have any ideas for the foundation, if you guys want to make requests for places that we should consider donating to, I think just reach out to us at foundation@madhappy.com. We'll get that and we'll do our best to prioritize that over time. Also, we're working on building out a few features on the website that allow people to donate directly, whether as part of an order or just on the side. So look out for that as well. And yeah, just excited to see where that goes. Today, we have a solo host episode. I hosted this. We recorded a couple weeks ago with Gretchen. You may know her from the Happier podcast. She's also the author of many, many books, as we get into in the episode. And I thought it was a great conversation overall, just hearing her perspective, someone who's really been working in mental health before other people were talking about it and been doing it for so long, and kind of her career path and also how that's like lined up with how she tries to live her life. So I think we get pretty deep with this one. What do you think, Mason?
I thought it was great. I mean, it's always nice for us to have people who aren't necessarily celebrities, but who are really mental health professionals in that way, and people who are highly educated, trained in the space to really talk about what they're doing and different things that people can relate to. I think we definitely want to start to have more of those kind of voices on the show, and start to hear from other doctors and therapists and additional authors, and really make the show as educational and impactful as we can. I think it's a different tone and it's a different kind of episode, and I think that people are gonna really like that, and I thought you did a great job going solo.
Yeah, let's definitely get into it. I hope everyone enjoys the show. And
the Mad Happy Podcast is brought to you by Optimism. Please enjoy the show with Gretchen Rubin.
Today we're joined by our friend Gretchen Rubin. Gretchen, thank you so much for being here.
I'm so happy to be talking to you.
You know, as we're starting this new year, I think I've been thinking a lot about it myself, but wondering for you, how do you introduce yourselves these days when you meet someone, whether it's on Zoom or in person?
I say I'm a writer and podcaster who studies happiness, good habits, and human nature.
Wow.
But I actually have a lot more than that. Like, I started an app called Happier, and I have products, and I'm sort of expanding all the tools that I offer to people. But I think my primary identity is still as a writer.
Yeah. And I'm curious, like, I feel like, you know, when I heard your name, even before we were having you on and had listened to some of your content, like just like the word happiness was like the one I associated with your name, and which I think is,
that's nice.
Yeah, which is a great thing. I'm wondering, like, what set you out on that like journey initially to like define happiness or really get to the root of it?
Well, I had started my career in law, and I was clerking for Justice Sandra Day O'Connor when I decided that I wanted to be a writer. So about 10 years after I had made the switch to being a writer, I was working on my fourth book, which is a biography of JFK. And I was at the kind of the end of it when, as a writer, your work is mostly done. It's kind of in the publisher's house, but you really aren't ready to start a new book because the book hasn't even hit the shelves yet. So it's sort of in this in-between period where I had more mental bandwidth maybe than I usually did. And I was in a city bus. I live in New York City. I was going cross town on a day of pouring rain. And I was sort of just out of sheer boredom. I looked out the window and I thought, well, what do I want from life anyway? And I thought, well, I want to be happy. But I realized I had no idea, was I happy? What was it to be happy? Could I make myself happier? And I often get really interested in a subject and will do immense amounts of research. And so this subject sort of instantly grabbed me. I ran out to the library and got a giant stack of books about happiness to try to figure out, like, what is it? And can I change my happiness level? And if so, what would I do? And I was just reading more and more and like learning all this stuff and being more and more curious. And there's so many things that I wanted to try that I thought, you know, I should have a happiness project. So I started doing all these things and kind of making it systematic because that's the way I am, just in general. And then finally I thought, wait, I'm doing all this research and work. Maybe this should be my next book project. And so then I wrote The Happiness Project. And since then, the subject of happiness is so huge and vast and fascinating that I've basically been studying aspects of happiness ever since. I wrote a book called Better Than Before about habit formation. I wrote a book called The Four Tendencies about a personality framework that I discovered or created, depending on your point of view. I wrote a little book called Outer Order, Inner Calm, because so many people say that outer order contributes to their inner calm. So that's how I got into it. Really, it started out as just a project for me, and then I realized it would be a great subject.
And I guess at the time when you were on that bus thinking that question, looking back now, like, would you say, were you happy?
You know, I was pretty happy. And all around the world, when you ask people about their happiness, most people say they're either pretty happy or very happy. So, you know, most people are pretty happy. And so I think I was very typical. But I certainly have made my life much happier since I've spent so much time thinking about it. Because now I found so much low-hanging fruit of things that I could do without taking a lot of time, energy, or money to make myself happier. And I continue to do that to this day. I'm constantly dreaming up things to do and things to try to see if they would make me happier. So I'm a big believer in the power of, you know, experimenting with changes to see if it'll make you, you know, happier, healthier, more productive, more creative, whatever you're aiming for.
Yeah. And I'm curious, growing up, I think you grew up in Kansas City, right?
I did, yes. Yeah. Kansas City, Missouri. If you know your Kansas City,
yes.
You know,
yes.
we pay a lot of attention to that.
You got to be very specific, yes.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, growing up, you know, I think what we try to talk about as a brand is just the full, you know, human experiences. Like, you're going to be happy some days, you're not going to be happy some days. Some days are just in between. I'm wondering, looking back, we try to like identify like the first time someone was aware of like their mental health growing up. Like, is there a formative experience for you when you were growing up, whether in middle school, high school, college, that it really like, you know, you start to think about it?
That is a great question. You know, nothing is springing to mind. Like, I don't think of sort of a moment of epiphany or sort of self-awareness like that. Huh. I will have to ponder that, but there's no moment that springs to my mind.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we see that often be the case, which I think, you know, for me, Mason, who's actually my co-host, who's not here today, has been my friend for 15 years. And he had been in therapy since he was like 7. So he was like my first friend that I knew that went to therapy, and that kind of opened up my eyes to it. So I think stories like that, I think, you know, end up being super impactful on us down the line as we learn more. Mm-hmm. But I'm wondering, as you set out, you know, on that quest to like define happiness, and now thinking about it and talking about it, what are like the few core tenets that you see, you know, wherever you're looking?
Well, one thing I think is true is if you're going to say sort of what's the secret to happiness, people are often like, what's the secret to happiness? You know, I think there's two ways you can answer that depending on how you come to the question. And one is relationships. Ancient philosophers and contemporary scientists agree that to be happy, we need relationships. We need to feel like we have intimate, deep, enduring bonds. We need to feel like we belong. We need to be able to get support. And just as important for happiness, we need to be able to give support. We need to be able to confide. And like when you look at the people who are happier, they have strong relationships in their life. If you ask people at work, are you happy at work? Most of the people who say they're happy at work say, I have a friend at work, not just a buddy who I talk about, like I joke around with by the coffee machine, but like a friend, somebody who has my back, somebody I trust, somebody who cares about like my, you know, my future, my well-being. And so anything that we do that deepens relationships or broadens relationships is something that's likely to make us happier. And I use this in my own life all the time. Like, oh, like, should I bother to go to my college reunion? Because it's like, oh, it's money, it's hassle. Like, I don't know who's going to be there. And it's like, yeah, you should probably go because you'll probably see people that you like and it'll re-engage with these old relationships. And so I use that a lot of times when I'm thinking about how to spend my time, energy, or money. But there's another way you could answer the question, and that is self-knowledge, because we each have to decide for ourselves. You know, we all have our own interests, our own values, our own temperament, our own circumstances. And so there can be no like one right way, because people are different. And like if they're trying to form a habit for something that they think would make them happier, whether that's meditating every day or getting back into playing piano or reading regularly or getting enough sleep or whatever it is, different strategies work for different people because people are very different. There's no magic solution. And also the things that people do that make them happier. Like I love reading. For me, reading is like my playground and my cubicle, but not everybody feels about reading the way I do. But then I don't spend that much time listening to music, where for other people, like a major part of their happiness project would be, I want to get back into playing music. I want to go to live performances. I want to perform. I want to listen to, you know, new forms of music. I want to write music. I want to, you know, I want to form relationships related to music. There might be all kinds of things that they would do to incorporate into their life. So you really have to start with self-knowledge, even things as simple as like, are you a morning person or a night person? Because I know all these night people who are like, oh, I need to get up early and go for a run before work. And I'm like, well, have you met yourself? Because I don't think that's going to work out, because night people are at their most productive and creative and energetic later in the day. And it's largely a function of genetics and age. So like if you're a night person, just set yourself up to suit yourself instead of trying to cram yourself into somebody else's model of what, you know, a happy routine would look like.
And I'm wondering on the relationship side, because I think we all hear that, right? Strong relationships are such a strong indicator for happiness and mood and those sorts of things. Is it a certain number of them or more so like the depth of each one that you've seen is most correlated?
Well, you know, it's interesting because there's a lot of different kinds of relationships, and certainly people have different kinds of preferences. So you have extroverted people who really gain a lot of energy from like engaging, and they tend to, you know, be more drawn to situations where there's more people, whereas people who are more introverted like prefer a more one-on-one kind of situation. So I don't think that there's a magic number. You know, some people really want a romantic relationship and they will feel lonely if they don't have a romantic relationship, even if they have lots of really close friends. For other people, that kind of relationship might be less important. Some people, you know, there are people who feel like their life is incomplete if they don't have a dog or a cat. You know, I know somebody who's just pining because she couldn't have a dog for a while because she lived in an apartment building. Because that's a special kind of relationship. Less convenient are the people who really want to have a horse. I know a few of them, and like that, you gotta design your life if you feel like you need a horse to be happy. But there's, so I think it's very dependent on the person.
Yeah. And I think a question we get all the time is like, if you feel like you don't have like the relationships that are like giving you sort of what you're looking for, where do you lead people then? Of course, over time, hopefully they build those relationships, but it's not, you know, something that happens right away.
Well, that's a great question. And one of the things that many adults report is that it's hard to make friends. Like when you're in school, it's a lot easier because you're around people. There's just a lot more opportunity. And one of the things that you see with friendship is that like being with somebody a lot, just kind of exposure, it's called the mirror exposure effect, that just being around somebody, you tend to like end up liking them or being friends with them. So which is one of the problems when people are like working from home is that, you know, they don't have that opportunity to just kind of like pick up friends because somebody's working down the hall or whatever. So there's a couple things that you can do if you feel like you don't have the relationships that you want. One thing that you can do is, and it depends on your circumstances, I'm a huge fan of starting or joining a group. It sounds funny to talk about efficiency in friendship, but making a friend takes time and energy. And if you're in a group, it's a lot more efficient because you're not making like one-on-one plans with a lot, which can become like really like difficult and tiresome. But it's like, if you have a group, and it could be anything, like you could have a book group, that's classic, but you could also, I know some people who they had a group when the podcast Serial was really popular. This was a bunch of people who love podcasts. So they would get together no one would listen to it. And then they would get together every Sunday morning and they would eat breakfast cereal and listen together. So it was Serial with Serial, and then talk about
that's
it.
Amazing.
And so, and I know a bunch of guys who did it, they would read New Yorker profiles together. So, but then it's like, I bring some friends, you bring some friends, I become friends with your friends, you become friends with my friends. Like, that's a really good way to form a social network. And if you miss a time or two, that's okay, because you'll catch up with them down the road. I'm a big fan of joining or starting a group. For a lot of people too, you can look back in your past and see, is there someone who got away? Is there someone where you were like, oh, I always thought we would be better friends. Like, I always liked him. We always had so much fun when we hung out. But somehow it never really got past the point of just being like acquaintances who really liked each other. So a lot of times you can go back to the past and see like, oh, you know, maybe I could reconnect with somebody who always felt like they were on the brink of being a friend. Or they're the people who got swept away, right? Like, we were neighbors and we were such good friends, but I moved to a different part of town and we kind of lost touch. Or we worked together, we started together at the same law firm, but then you moved to a different firm, I'm at a different firm, we're busy. And so again, we kind of lost touch. It wasn't that we fell out of friendship. It was just that whatever helped us to maintain our friendship changed. But now maybe it takes a little bit more effort. Sometimes reaching back to those friendships that were once strong or felt like they could be strong is easier than just sort of like looking around a bunch of strangers and being like, okay, who here looks like I might be friends with them, which is can be intimidating.
Yeah, that's such a good point, because I feel like, you know, now even you just bringing that up, I'm thinking about all the people that I could reconnect with that we just fell out of touch, whether because we don't go to school together anymore, we're not neighbors anymore.
Right.
So it's such a good point. But I think on the opposite end of the spectrum, we talk about, you know, being able to spend time alone and by yourself as well, you know, as part of happiness or, you know, whatever we want to call it. How have you found that, you know, kind of yin and yang balanced approach in happiness?
Well, I think that you're exactly right. And I think that for many people, they're just starved for solitude. And solitude is not loneliness. Loneliness is sort of draining and upsetting and, you know, has terrible consequences for health. Whereas solitude, restorative solitude, really helps people kind of get back to themselves and recharge. And I think people are very different. And back to this idea of having to know yourself, I think this is something where you really need to know yourself and know kind of your, like, what's your set point? Because if you're in a situation like, say, all your family is around you 24 hours, suddenly you may find that you're not getting the solitude that once was just sort of baked into your day, and now you really need it. Or maybe your family situation or your living situation has changed and you don't find yourself with a kind of solitude. And some people can have solitude. Some people like a kind of social solitude where it's like, I'm in a laptop at a busy coffee shop. So I don't know anybody there and no one's paying any attention to me. So I feel like I'm alone, but I also kind of like the vibe of the crowd. You know, some people really want that. Some people, like, I want to be in an empty apartment. Like, I like feeling like there's no one there. Maybe my dog is there. One of the reasons I like dogs and cats is they're kind of like, you can be in solitude and in company. Like, they kind of are a bridge. But so I think it's something where we really want to pay attention to ourselves and think about, well, maybe I've had not enough, or maybe I have had too much. And I have a friend who said to me, like, I realize, she's like, she loves to read the way I do. And she's living by herself now for the first time in a long time. And she said, I realize I have to say yes to every plan that anybody suggests to me, because otherwise I'll just stay home and read. And I'm perfectly happy doing that. But I know in the end, I won't be happy. So I have to force myself to get out, because I know in the end, that's what's really going to support my happiness. So again, she was noticing, like, this solitude is appealing and easy, but in the end, it's not this much solitude. Now that I'm living alone, it's not going to be good for me. So I think we have to be very attuned to it. It's really important to think about.
Yeah, I think solitude is such a good word. And I've honestly never heard that used in this case, because being alone isn't necessarily being lonely. And I think that that's like such an important distinction, because even when you brought that up, I feel like I'm always, you know, trying to run this company, you know, you feel like you're always around people, and it's like so much like stimulation that like when I do get some time away, even if it's like you said at a coffee shop or something where there are physically people around, it does give me that solitude that I feel like I sometimes don't get in my daily life. So an important distinction.
I think some people get it with exercise too. Like if they're going for a run, no one's going to talk to them, or if they're on their bike, you know, they're kind of alone with their thoughts and nature. So it's not even always like a still kind of solitude, but it's more about being kind of free and no one's talking to you and no one's kind of clamoring for your attention.
Yeah, totally. I'm also wondering, like, I feel like there's a lot of happiness in habits and routine, at least for myself. And it was something I definitely wanted to ask you, because I feel like when I'm on my, you know, I do my workout, I get my work done, that type of like routine, like I feel that like my baseline happiness is probably a little bit higher than normal versus when I have like no control of my day. How is like, you know, your research talked about habits?
Well, I am fascinated by habits. It's such a complex and important subject. And so I wrote a whole book called Better Than Before, about how we can make or break our habits. And what I found is that research shows that about 40% of everyday life is shaped by habits. So if we have habits that work for us, like you say, working out, getting your work done, we're just much more likely to be happier, healthier, more productive, and more creative. And if we have habits that don't work for us, then it's just going to be a lot harder. And so what I found when I started looking into, you know, how do you change a habit? Like, okay, good. How do I change it? I found 21 strategies that people can use to make or break their habits. And sometimes people say to me like, oh, 21 is too many. Give me three, give me two, give me one. But actually it's good that there are so many, because some of these strategies work really well for some people, but do not work at all for other people and might even be counterproductive. Some of them are available to us at some times in our lives and can be very powerful, but they aren't available to us at all times. And so it's good to know that there are 21 and to think about all of them, because that way you can, you know, you can pick and choose the ones that are right for you. Because again, it's back to what we were talking about with self-knowledge. Just the fact that something works really well for me doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to work for you. Maybe it would. You might try it. You might be interested to hear about my experience. But in the end, we all sort of have to figure out the right mix for ourselves, because people are so different.
So it really does all start with knowing yourself.
It does.
And I'm wondering, you know, we have a very young audience that listens to the show. And I do feel like it's different growing up now with social media and all the technology around kids from such an early age. Like, how do you think that's impacted, you know, their mental health, their happiness, and how do you think it'll be different, you know, as this generation is growing up?
Well, there's a huge amount of research going on all the time, trying to understand how technology affects our happiness, how social media affects our happiness, what the long-term consequences of it are going to be. It's fascinating to think about. I think that sort of for the average person thinking about it right now, the way I think about it is technology is a great employee and a bad boss. So what we want, you mentioned earlier, the idea of control, feeling in control. The feeling of being in control is very important to happiness. Like the more, if you feel like you're in control, that goes a long way. If you feel out of control, if you feel like, oh, I'm doom scrolling all the time, I'm spending 3 hours like going through my social media feed I know I'd be happier if I read a novel, and I love to read novels, so I don't understand like why I'm getting stuck. My sister was addicted to Candy Crush and like had to like quit Candy Crush twice. And like her son was like begging her, like, delete it, you know? So I think it's really to step back and think, okay, is this serving me? Because in some ways things serve us. I'm a huge fan of the way social media, we talked earlier about relationships. Social media makes it much easier to like stay in touch with people especially if you're young and you're moving all the time, like it's great because you know, you don't have to like, you can just stay in touch with somebody on social media. You don't have to keep like asking them their address or something old school. It can be a great source of pleasure and relaxation if you use it mindfully and well, and make sure that it's doing what you want it to do. And not taking over. So if, you know, if you're like, oh, I kind of like to spend 15 minutes, you know, like on my lunch hour, like scrolling through Instagram and like looking for cool, you know, design ideas, then maybe that's something that really serves you well. It suits you. But for somebody else, that would not be a good idea. Or maybe they wouldn't be able to stop. Maybe you find it easy to like put it down and walk away and somebody else just gets sucked in. So one of the questions is this habit driving out other habits that I value more? I mean, same thing like with TV. It's like, well, TV is great and no one loves Game of Thrones more than I do. But if I stay up until 3 a.m., like binge watching a rerun of Game of Thrones, that's not good. Within reason, it adds a lot to my life and I really enjoy it. But if I let it just run away with me, it might interfere with things that are more important. So it's all about thinking about what serves me. Because again, people are different and someone else might not have an issue with something and just be able to like have fun with it. And for somebody else, it sort of overtakes them.
And in your research, is the goalpost like moving for happiness, or are the parameters for happiness for the younger generation changing a bit? Because I feel like it can't. Do you see that as being consistent, even though there's more distractions, more things that are permeating through like their generation?
You know, I think human nature is pretty consistent. So I don't think things change wildly. It might be that different temptations come up. I mean, it is true that it's very common in human nature to feel like something has just burst on the scene and now is like messing with people's minds. Like this happened with novels. People were like, oh my gosh, like this is just going to totally destroy people's sense of reality. Yeah. You know, and it's like, now we teach it in school. So part of it, and yet there is something different about social media, you know, there was something different about TV. I mean, TV changed culture forever in ways I think that we still don't really grasp.
Yeah.
How different before a television was and how it changed the way that human beings interacted with each other. So I think it is absolutely fascinating and it's still playing out. But I think that there's the basics, we can still kind of count on the basics. Like getting enough sleep, getting some exercise. Like you have to get some exercise to keep your brain and your happiness like kind of functioning. And technology does make it much more appealing to just like plunk yourself down and stay. Yeah. And so it takes more effort than it did 150 years ago.
For sure, yeah.
You know, before cars.
Yeah. No, I mean
to get your 10,000 steps in. I don't think
100%.
I don't think that was such a challenge. Yeah.
And Gretchen, I'm wondering, because something I talk about with my therapist is control. Like I always feel like I feel my best when I'm in control, but there's also something about being able to accept when you don't have control over a situation instead of suffering through that whole time. So I'm wondering, you know, we can't have control over every situation. And how do you deal with those times where you just got to say, hey, like I can't control this, and accept it and move on, you know, is the lesson I got from my therapist, but wondering what you think about that.
Well, that's really, really important, because you're exactly right. There are things that are not in our control, and by kind of just banging ourselves up against that reality can become very draining and frustrating. And so I think it's very important to think about what we can control and what we can't control. I will say in my observation, and I don't think this is like rational, but I think it's one of these things that kind of rings true, even though, because basically we are irrational, is that sometimes when people are feeling like things are very much out of their control, it does give them a feeling of comfort and reassurance to control the things that they are in control. So like one thing I noticed was that during the pandemic period, a lot of people wanted to like clear clutter in their homes. Now, part of that was because they were spending more time at home, sure. But I think it was also sort of like, I can't control what's happening outside, but I can control my basement. And like, you know, everything's making me a little bit, you know, feel overwhelmed. And so do my pantry shelves. So why don't I deal with that? Or like, why don't I clean out my medicine cabinet? I walked into my sister's shower stall and I was like, I'm stressed out just looking at the number of hair products you have in here. Like, you got to bring this visual noise down, because like, yeah, you can't live like this, you know? And so I think that, and that's just one thing, or like getting control of your body through like exercising, getting enough sleep, feeling like you're feeling like you're following through on your promises to yourself and doing the things that you know sustain you. doing something like daily reading. A lot of people like to do daily spiritual reading or have a daily spiritual practice so they feel like they're tied to kind of more transcendent values. Same thing with, you know, maybe you're volunteering or doing something where you feel like, I can't help everyone, but I can try to help some people. And I can't do it every day, but maybe I can do it some days. And again, it's not rational because there are these bigger things that you can't control. But often by controlling some things that we can control, we do give ourselves that feeling of like kind of more solidly planted on the ground. And it's also true that often when we do things to kind of control what we can control, we might give ourselves more energy and more emotional wherewithal to deal with other things. So if you're exhausted because you stay up late and you never exercise and you never go out in the daylight and you eat a bunch of junk food, you're going to feel kind of lousy. And so then when it's like, hey, do you want to volunteer like to help people like register to vote? You're going to think, oh my gosh, like I can't even think about it. Like I got too much on my plate. I can't handle that. Right. It's hard to turn outward and to think about the world when you're not feeling great, whether because you're not feeling physically great or you're feeling, you have a lot of negative emotions, whether it's fear, sorrow, whatever. And what research shows is that people who are happier do tend to volunteer more, give away more money, vote, they have healthier habits. And people who are less happy can tend to become more defensive and isolated and preoccupied with their own problems. So it's one of these things where sometimes people worry that it's selfish to worry about trying to be happier. But in fact, we should be selfish if only for selfless reasons, because it's by being happy ourselves that we often prepare ourselves to think about the problems of the world and the problems of other people.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a good point. We always talk about taking care of yourself first, and that's how you can show up the best in your relationships and life and everything you do. But a very important question, because you brought up clutter, and I know you talk about, I know you talk about making your bed being like a very important start to the day. It's funny because
For some people, I would never say that works for everybody. But I will say that many people report that makes them happier.
Which is fair, because that was exactly my question. Because like, I would say my girlfriend gets a lot of happiness out of making the bed, but I get zero happiness out of it. So I'm just wondering. You know, I do believe in this concept of like how you do anything is how you do everything. But I do think sometimes it's hard.
But not when it comes to making your bed.
Well, my question is like, does that apply to everything? Because if, you know, I give it my all to every single thing I do, then there's just less things I can do or something of that sort. So I don't know. I'm just wondering your take on it, because I do feel like some of these things that are just like these like rules that like everyone says aren't necessarily true for everyone. And so just wanted your take on it.
I don't think that the way you do anything is the way you do everything. Like, cause I think your example is a perfect example of that. Or you could just say like, it's not valuable to you. So you've decided not to do it, and you're doing that perfectly, which is I'm going to use my time and my energy towards the things that matter to me. And it doesn't matter to me. Now you might say it matters to me because it matters to her. And if it's going to make her feel resentful or like whatever, then maybe that's something that you value. You're like, I don't do it because I think it matters. But if it really matters to you, sometimes we choose to do things that we don't really particularly value or care about because they're really important to someone else. So that could be a reason. But it's interesting, just on the subject of clutter, you see people like invoking battling studies about like, you know, a clear desk means a clear mind, and like you should like get focused and take it down, be minimal. And that's what's going to help you with creativity and productivity. And then you see research that's like, ooh, yeah, people are more creative when there's some mess. And you know why? It's because people are different. And some people are simplicity lovers and they like, you know, a bare surface and a clean shelf and not much on the walls, and they love simplicity. And some people are abundance lovers and they love buzz and profusion and collection and choice and a lot of piles around. And those are just preferences. And it's like, and people often want to say, well, I'm right, you're wrong. Or maybe they're like, oh, you're right, I'm wrong. What's wrong with me? And it's like, no one's right, no one's wrong. People have different preferences. And if you have a simplicity lover living with an abundance lover, or you've got these people working in an open office together, the question is, given our different preferences, how do we create an atmosphere where we both feel comfortable, which is different from constantly bickering about why you should do it my way? Because if your girlfriend said to you, you should make the bed, Well, why should you? If you don't care, why would you make your bed?
Right.
If you care, make your bed. I care, so I make my bed. But there's no magic to it. And so I think it's really, and I think when we talk about preferences, a lot of times, like, the anger and the conflict go away, because it's not that you're ignoring me or you're doing something that makes no sense. It's like, it makes sense from your perspective. It makes sense. And from my perspective, what I do makes sense. So let's work it out. How do we make this work?
Well, I think that's a good lesson for me. So thank you. I'm wondering, I read this quote that you talk about, you know, acting the way that you want to feel. Right. And sometimes, I think that was a quote. Perhaps we're not feeling as good as we would like to in the moment. And of course, like, we also talk about having to just accept that and allow those emotions and feelings to go through your body and be able to identify them instead of always being like, why am I not happy today? Yes. But I do think there's so much to, like, you know, trying to put your best foot forward, being an optimist, like we talk about. But what did you mean by that quote?
Well, the research shows that, kind of to an uncanny degree, that we think that we're acting because of the way that we feel, but to a very great degree, we feel because of the way we act. Mm. So it's like, let's say you're yelling and slamming doors. It's not that you're angry and so then you're slamming doors and yelling. It's more like your brain is like, wow, with all this yelling and slamming doors, I guess there's a lot of anger here. Like, let's pump up the feelings of anger. And so what this means is that I think you're exactly right, that you don't want to deny your feelings or press them down or kind of pretend to yourself that you're in a completely different state. But sometimes you know very well how you feel and you just wish you felt different. So you're like, you walk into a party and you're like, wow, I feel really insecure. I feel really self-conscious. I don't really know anybody here. Okay, right. So you know that's how you feel. Fair enough. I often have felt that way when I walked into a party. So you could say to yourself, I'm going to act that way. So I'm going to go, like, stand in the corner and just kind of look around with big wide eyes, or like maybe go in the bathroom and hide out there for a while and see if somebody you know comes in. I've done that too. Or you can sort of say, you know what? I want to act the way I want to feel. I want to act friendly. I want to act engaged. I want to act curious. I want to put that energy into my body and my face. And I'm going to walk. There's a line to get a drink. So I'm going to just go there and sort of try to have a friendly look on my face. And I'm going to act friendly and open. And what you find is that you will encourage that feeling in yourself. Or like, you're feeling really sluggish. You're walking down the street and it's like you're low energy. And you're like, you know what? I wish I felt more like, why am I feeling so like, ugh, I want to just like pump up the energy a little bit. If you just like start walking faster, speaking more quickly, just using more energy in your body, you will make yourself feel more energetic. And so you can kind of invoke these feelings in yourself by shaping your behavior the way you wish you felt. Because the fact is, it's very, very hard to go directly into your emotional state and control it. That's very hard. But it's much easier to control your physical actions. So I'm a big fan of like going from the outside in, because I just feel like that's so much easier. Like, it's much easier to say, like, run down the stairs with, you know, like, and jump over a puddle or do 10 jumping jacks to get your energy up. That works great. But if I'm like, sit here and think about, like, why I should have more energy, I'm like, that doesn't sound, you know, what's that going to do? That's how I feel.
Since your first book came out, I think it was 2009.
That was my fourth book, or maybe my fifth book. Wait, one, two, three. Oh. That was my fifth book, but that was the book that most people noticed. Oh. After 10 years, I was an overnight sensation.
Amazing. Well, aren't we all? So that's So apologies for that, but since your first happiness book, maybe that's
there.
In 2009, I mean, I would say the last 5 years have been really when mental health has started to become more a part of daily conversation. You know, some of the meditation apps that started springing up over the past decade, and then a lot of the books and the talking and all that sort of stuff. And then even more recently, the last year, with like the athletes coming out, being able to talk about their mental health and how they're feeling. I'm wondering, from your perspective, how do you see this becoming more a part of daily discussion and the culture that we're all living in? You know, do you see that as a positive? Do you see room for improvement on the discourse? Like, how do you view that for someone who's been working in the space for many, many years now?
Well, I think it's great. I think the more we can talk about it, the more helpful it is. And I think it's really terrific the way people feel much more open and able to talk about, especially their, you know, negative emotions that they're feeling or circumstances. And so everybody to just have a lot more vocabulary to discuss it. It's funny. One of the things that people sometimes say to me is they're like, oh, well, you know, people are so worried about being happy that it makes them unhappy. And people sort of like, you know, they kind of like trip over their own feet because they're so worried about happiness that they get that, you know, stresses them out. To me, I'm like, I don't think that's a problem. Like, I never run into that. What I run into is people who just never think about it. They're busy, they're distracted, and they never pick up their head. I never did until I got stuck in that bus. And they just never think like, are you happy? Could you be happier? Are there things that you could do with not very much time, energy, or money that would be likely to make you happier? Are there things that you're doing without even really realizing it or maybe enjoying it that are dragging you down that you could change, again, without a lot of time, energy, or money? Like, what's the low-hanging fruit in your life? I feel like it's like lack of attention is a bigger problem than like people tripping over their own feet. So I think that anything that helps shine a spotlight on this issue that makes people just step back and reflect. And I think people do that much more now. And there's a lot more kind of catalyst for reflection now, whether, you know, because it used to be everybody talked about it around the new year. But now there's so much, there's just, as you say, there's apps, there's podcasts, there's much more written about it. Celebrities are talking about it. There's just a lot more opportunities to sort of be reminded to think like, oh yeah, what's been going on in my head lately? Like maybe I need to deal with that.
And as someone who, you know, I think your public persona gets labeled, you know, as someone who is talking about happiness, so it is probably always happy and doesn't deal with like the challenges we all deal with. What is something that you're currently struggling with?
What am I struggling? Well, I'm struggling with the uncertainty of the pandemic, of course, because I keep making plans that then get canceled. I worry that like I am kind of a homebody and I'm very happy just like hanging out at home. And I worry about sort of resetting my level of engagement. Like it's very important. I actually am much happier and do much better when I am like kind of at the edge of where I'm comfortable, not crossing, but being up at the edge. And this period, I have not been near that edge and I've settled into that quite comfortably. And so I want to make sure that, you know, and every time I sort of think I'm gearing up to like assume some version or of you know, the next normal, it's kind of retreated again. So I'm concerned about like not resetting my expectations for myself at a lower place. I want to make sure I was really better off having a lot more than I have now in terms of social engagement, both with close friends and with acquaintances, like pushing myself to go to something where like maybe I only knew a few people. You know, where it's kind of uncomfortable. It's not like an easy, fun thing. It's more like, okay, this is going to be like a little, but then you can often, you know, make new friends or new, or like make new connections, which is really exciting. And so that's, I want to make sure that I step it up for myself.
Yeah.
I want to accept myself, but also expect more for myself.
Yeah. That's, it's very, very true. And I mean, I guess as you look towards this year and the years to come, what do you hope to keep accomplishing and putting out there and spreading?
Well, I have my podcast, Happier with Gretchen Rubin. And so I want to keep that up. And that's like one of the joys of my life. I'm working on a book right now, which, you know, clever title to come. Any suggestions, welcome. It's a book about the five senses and how we can tap into our five senses for sort of a greater sense of vitality and engagement and kind of connection to the past and the present. And that's just such an extraordinarily fascinating subject, but you know, it's such a great subject. I hope I can write a book that will do justice to that subject, but I'm having such a great time. And then I've launched an app, the Happier app, which is a habit tracking app that's got all different kinds of tools for all different kinds of people. And then I sort of started creating products too, because I've seen how a lot of people, a beautiful tool can make work a joy. And I've seen some people like an app, because it's really convenient and easy. Some people want a physical notebook that they write in. They like the tactile, they like the act of writing. So, you know, different tools for different people. I've really come to believe that. And so now I want to like put that out into the world in the way that I engage with listeners and viewers and readers.
Well, that's amazing. And as you know, we're big fans. We'll definitely be linking to all that stuff in the show notes and excited to watch where it goes. But I'll ask you the two closing questions we ask every guest, which is, if you had to nominate someone who you think has a powerful mental health story or an inspiring journey that we should have on the show, who would it be? And you don't even have to know them.
Oh, Kate Bowler. Absolutely. She wrote Everything Happens for a Reason and other books. And she has a podcast called Everything Happens. And she's got she's a fascinating person who's really reflects and has many, many thought provoking things to say.
Cool. I just wrote it down. That's a great one. And finally, Gretchen, what makes you mad happy?
Reading. I love to read. Wow. That's my favorite thing to do. So, yeah, if you saw the stacks of to be read books in my apartment, it's like, it's getting out of control, and I still go to the library too. So I don't know what I'm going to do. But no, nothing makes me happier than reading.
What's the best book you read last year?
What's the last book I read? I just finished
a book. Best.
Oh, the best. Oh, I don't know. I could never pick. I just reread a book that I loved. I reread it because I loved it so much, called Pure and Easy by Susanna Clark, which I highly recommend. Short novel. So good.
Amazing.
But I've read so many great books. It's hard to conjure them up in my mind.
Well, Gretchen, thank you so much for joining us. Keep up all the amazing work. We'll definitely be supporting and excited to see what comes in this year and many years to come. But thank you for joining us.
Thank you. I so enjoyed our conversation.
Thank you guys so much for listening. Hope you enjoyed that episode with Gretchen. Let us know what you thought about it. Obviously, always hit us up with other questions or topics or any guests that you guys want us to have on the show. We also want to remind everyone and ourselves that mental health is an ongoing process and is something that takes daily work. For more information, you can always find us at localoptimist.com/podcast.
Remember to leave us 5 stars, follow us on Spotify, subscribe on Apple, and just keep the questions coming. We're at podcast@madhappy.com, or you could DM us on Instagram. And hopefully we'll get to some of the questions in upcoming episodes.
See you guys next week. The Mad Happy Podcast is brought to you by Optimism.